This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friend and partner in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, we have an annual event that you and I like to do, which is one of us attending a Tennessee Titans preseason game and then kind of deconstructing the experience and roasting the Titans a little bit. So I look forward to doing that, but I want to throw a little love to a sponsor. This episode is going to be sponsored by Gut Check Press and a new book called A Hard Thing on a Beautiful Day by me. I'm the author of the book, Pipe. So this is an essay collection.
Those are our favorite products to have as sponsors, by the way.
They really are, and I feel like we can do a real heartfelt promo read at that point. So this is a personal essay collection, 80 essays on sports, Christian life, pop culture, movies, music. If you enjoy my work on the Happy Rant podcast or in print, run, don't walk to Amazon.com, a little online bookseller that we've entered into kind of a unique contract with, Pipe, in that every book, a little portion of the proceeds goes to Amazon. And then a little portion goes to me. So I'm excited to see how that shakes out. I hope people like that.
Yeah, I'm excited to get it. I always enjoy your essays. And I'm going to completely judge this book by its cover, which is exceptional. And so therefore I will read it because the cover is really good.
Dude, it's my favorite cover of all time. It has a picture of my son, Maxim, as a sixth grader running in the Tennessee State cross-country meet. So it's just a cream-colored background. Just a pullout of Maxim looking really intense, and the book is called A Hard Thing on a Beautiful Day, which is the title of one of the essays in there about watching Maxim run. So Maxim was he was adopted from Ukraine, and when we got him, he was so weak, like he couldn't even stand up on his own at age three. He would like blow over in a stiff breeze, and now he's running in state cross country meets, man, which is pretty exciting for me as a dad. But also exciting as a dad, Pipe, was the fact that I took my kid to Nissan Stadium for his birthday. So my son Tristan is 16. He is a rabid New England Patriots fan. So given the fact that he grew up most of his life in Michigan, Tom Brady went to Michigan, he's just always been ride or die with the Pats. So we put on our Pats jerseys, journeyed down to Nissan Stadium. And I want to start kind of chronologically, Pipe, just with the parking and walking to the stadium experience. So
you forgot the adjective terrifying parking and walking to the stadium experience.
Oh, dude, absolutely. So, okay. So we parked kind of over the river across the bridge at the Sobro garage. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever parked in that area, but it was a nice parking garage. It was fine. You know, we got our ticket, we parked, but then like, getting to the Siegenthaler footbridge involved swimming through probably the largest group of like completely smashed affluent young people I'd ever seen in my life. Like literally swimming through like girls in sundresses, douchebags wearing like khaki shorts and pastel colored polos, absolutely like wrecked, right? Bombed out of their trees. And this is at like 4 p.m. on a Saturday.
See what's so, that's interesting because that's so for those who are not familiar with Nashville, Broadway is like the Vegas Strip of Nashville. It's where all the honky tonks.
Totally.
Sobro
totally.
Is like three blocks over, but it's where it's a lot like retro chic yuppie-ish stuff. So if you're on Broadway, it's like Daisy Dukes and cowboy boots, and I think the dudes are wearing the same thing. And then Sobro is it's like popped Lacoste shirt collars and boat shoes. So
yeah, dude, it was a great time to like basically explain like drunkenness to my son. And I was basically like, it's a really good thing I didn't live in a city like this in my early 20s, because I would have made a habit out of like beating the crap out of guys like this on the regs, you know, because I was a much less mature person then. And like, you know, bar fights with these guys would have just been a part of my like weekly routine, which would have been bad. That's
and
not
also
a good thing.
These are the type of guys who would start a bar fight not by smashing a bottle on the bar, but by like throwing a Manhattan in your face or something.
Exactly.
It's the equivalent of like the glove slap from Robin Hood Men in Tights.
It would be a Manhattan, and I would wipe the Manhattan off my face and just go like, you just threw away $17, you know? That's just bad. That's bad money.
No, be like, next time, just hand me the cash and then we'll fight. Everybody wins.
Dude, right. Throw the cash at my face and then I'll pick it up and then I'll destroy you afterward. But so, yeah, we swam through all these drunk people. It was fascinating. Yeah, I really hadn't fully taken in the Broadway experience in a few years. And your Vegas Strip comparison pipe is apropos. Like, I have been to Vegas. And Vegas is one of my least favorite places in the world, and yeah, this wouldn't be far behind, I don't think.
Yeah, it's just like there are fewer like adult shows, and by I don't think there are any on Broadway, but there are enough sort of drunken bachelorette parties that you're like, oh, this is all an appetizer. Like this is the appetizer for what Vegas offers. It's just and it's gotten crazier in the last 3 or 4 years because it has now gained a reputation as like Party Town USA for redneck bachelorettes.
Dude, totally. It was the redneck bachelorette capital of the world in that, like, I know we've talked about this in the show before, so I won't spend a lot of time on it. The sort of like bike bar, like the thing you sit on and pedal.
Yeah,
while you
drink. Pedal tavern or the pedal pub.
Dude, that seems to me to be the most like incongruous thing in American public life, in the sense that, like, who ever in the history of drinking has been like, you know what would make this better? Like a stationary bike.
Sweating. Like sweating would make this better.
If I had a stationary bike while I was getting smashed, then I'd really be happy. You know, I don't think any person ever has said that, but yeah, that's what happened in Nashville a few years ago.
I feel like those were started as a, let's see what we can get drunk people to do that's funny. And then they realized, wait a minute, drunk people will do a lot of crazy stuff. We can make money off of this. Yeah. And they're everywhere.
Dude, they are. It's ridiculous. The streets are just like clogged with these things and clogged with like legitimate double-decker buses full of drunk bachelorettes. I mean, it's really wild. It was a really interesting scene. The kind of thing that, like, I enjoyed seeing it once, but if I had to navigate that on a regular basis, i.e. if I lived near there, I think I would go crazy. And I would, even in middle age, I would be in bar fights all the time.
The plus side of all that is that stretch of road is not on the way to anywhere. It just dead ends into the Cumberland River. And
yeah,
so,
that's right.
Like, it's also at sort of the bottom of a hill, so it literally is just like everything sort of flows down into it. But getting around, like if you're trying to get to any other part of Nashville, you do not have to go through it, which is
great. Like a cul-de-sac for morons, you know, which is perfect. Like somebody was really thinking when they designed that. All right, Pipe. So we swam through the drunken D-bags, made our way across the footbridge, which offers truly like spectacular vistas of Nashville and the river. Mm-hmm. Like I want to take a moment to go positive on that, man. That was and it ended up being a really good place to park and walk, in the sense that, you know, it wasn't like an insane walk to the stadium. So we get to the stadium, we get there early because I'm freakish about watching every minute of warmups. I just like to do games that way. So, in 2019, Pipe, none of your like ticket activity is paper or cardboard. Every ticket gets scanned on a phone. So whether you use Ticketmaster or StubHub or whatever, like I have a StubHub app on my phone. And like as soon as they opened the gates, people started streaming through. But there was this huge bottleneck because it was like 114 degrees and there was like a surface of the sun quality to being outdoors in Nashville that evening. Like the scanners that were supposed to scan the barcodes on everybody's phone weren't working right. Because it was so bright, like the ticket takers couldn't see where to scan the barcode. And so what should have taken seconds, it took like minutes to get everybody into the game, which was really aggravating. So that was an instance of like technology not actually making our lives any easier. And also, like when I was a kid, man, I used to collect ticket stubs. Like whenever I would go to a ball game with my dad, like I would bring the stubs home. I'd put them in a little box. I still have them. It was a great kind of archive of like all the awesome stuff we've done together, and not so much in 2019.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point where you can actually buy ticket stubs at like the souvenir joints at like the Ryman or at baseball. You know, so it's like take home a ticket stub with you. I was like, I used to just have a ticket stub.
Right, used to be the thing you bought.
Right, or you could like collect them from the people you went with, or ask somebody else there, be like, "Hey, can I just get your ticket stub?" And they'd be like, "Sure, here you go." And because it was just junk, but it was also a collectible. It's now it's like, oh, but you can spend $8.99 for a mock up one.
Exactly. No, it's terrible, man. That's the kind of thing that like inordinately bums me out. Like, I get more bummed by it than I should, but yeah.
Nostalgic Ted is suffering.
Oh, nostalgic Ted suffered, baby. So, you know those stadiums, Pipe, about which people say there's not a bad seat in the house? Nissan Stadium is not one of those. So
no, in fact, there's the opposite could probably be said. There's not really a good seat there.
Exactly. Like, so a few years ago when we went to a Titans game, I was much cheaper and I bought upper deck tickets thinking, oh, they won't be so bad. And at that game, when they did the Air Force flyover, I felt like we were looking down into the F-16s, you know, we could have
high-fived the pilot as he went by.
Yeah. We could have like thrown popcorn onto the pilot from where we were sitting. So this year I sprang for some better seats and we were five rows up, kind of in the corner of an end zone, which ended up being a really good seat. Like the vantage point for watching stuff was really great. So we got to watch the Patriots warm up, and we got to, you know, kind of see Brady up close and all that stuff, which was really cool for my son. I have an observation on warm-ups, Pipe, and I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but why does every football team at every level of football in the world warm up for like an hour before the game, especially when it's 114 degrees? Like, I cease to understand this because, I mean, these teams have been practicing twice a day for a month. You know, they're not learning anything new in warmups. They're not like fine tuning anything. It seems to me that they're just exhausting themselves. And it seems to me also that like Bill Belichick is the only person on the planet who has started to understand this. Like the Patriots, they warmed up like a full 20 minutes less than the Titans.
Well, yeah, especially because, you know, Brady's what, 41? You know, he's like, he throws six times. He's like, you know, I'm as warm as I'm going to get. It's 700 degrees out here. And if I throw any more, those are throws that I can't make later. So
absolutely.
I'm using up my bullets.
Well, dude, and especially for the linemen who play literally the whole game. I mean, they play every offensive snap. Like, you don't need 55 minutes of, you know, getting into your stance and firing out. And I mean, 10, 12 minutes of that, you're good, man. You're ready to go. So Belichick actually had his whole team warm up like 20 minutes less than the Titans. And his linemen probably warmed up 15 minutes less than everybody else. Like his linemen came out last and they were probably only on the field for like 10 or 12 minutes warming up, which I thought was fascinating. And I thought it was really wise.
It seems to give lie to the idea of warming up. Like the idea is you're cold, getting off the bus or whatever, which of course they didn't really, like they rolled in off of like a luxury bus into a palatial locker room. They're fine.
Exactly.
And you need to get your joints and your muscles and whatever. It's like stretching and getting your heartbeat up a little bit and then you're good to go. Like you don't need, like in peewee football, maybe you need to run through some plays to remind people that like when we call the whatever dive, it means this, but.
Yeah.
And at the NFL, that should not be the case.
Exactly. No, it was really cool, man, to see somebody like finally thinking through that. And like the college team I coach, the Division II team, I just work with a special team, so I have no control over like how long the warm up is. But these poor kids, man, we get to the stadium like 4.5 hours early. They sit outside in the heat and just sweat and get dehydrated. And then we warm up for like 1 hour and 15 minutes. And it's just like, our poor roster, man. Our kids are dead before the game even starts, and I'm certain we've left like two or three games a season out on the field at warmups. But at any rate, the game started, and I noticed a few things, and I texted this to you, I think. So the Titans mascot is a raccoon, and this is confusing to me. Can you explain to me why, like, a team that's branded as like they have the, like these 300-esque graphics of like oily steroidal dudes like slamming spears into the ground and stuff.
Yeah,
and then their mascot is a raccoon.
They even used to do the clip from 300, you know, the This Is Sparta clip, except it was like This Is Nashville, and then they would kick, and it was, you know, I'm not even sure that's legal, but I don't know where the raccoon came from, because when I went to the preseason game last year, the mascot was like a big American Gladiator looking dude who was carrying like an axe spear and had like he was some combination of like gladiator and Roman soldier mix. You know, he had like the big plumed helmet, but then like very gladiatorial, attire on.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Oily, big muscles shining, very hairless.
That made sense, at least given the fact that it's the Titans, I guess.
In theory.
Although I always wondered about the interpersonal dynamic between the steroidal like Roman soldier guy and the players themselves. I mean, in the sense that like in a very real way, the players are actual gladiators. And the players look every bit as steroidal and oily and like impressive as the mascot guy. So I always wondered if the mascot guy felt a little sheepish, just a little bit like I'm an imposter here, you know.
I feel like he's probably the type who's like, you know, if I'd had a better coach, I could have, you know, I could have been.
Yeah, yeah. If you I know, hadn't, my, if I hadn't it was separated my shoulder in college,
yeah, it was my,
you know,
it was my defensive line coach really held me back.
Exactly.
He's one of those guys.
Yeah, I think you're 100% correct that he's one of those guys for sure. So, yeah, again, Piper, the branding and, like, presentation aspect of the Titans is just kind of a head-scratcher for me. The uniform is terrible, as we've discussed before, and it occurred to me this time that it manages to be both incredibly busy and incredibly boring at the same time. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, because it's busy because they do 1,100 different things with it, but they still do it in two-tone blue, which means there's – it's not so much contrast as it is just like yuck. It looks like it looks like an old school like police officer patrol uniform or like or the postman's uniform. Like when if a Titans player was to walk up to your door, you'd be like, "That's a very large mailman." You know, like that's the feeling of it.
Dude, you're right. It looks very U.S. Postal Service. I had never put that together, but that's a fascinating observation. Yeah, they should have that little like, you know, chain wallet thing that the postmen have, and
a little can of mace for the barking dogs,
and a little like clipboard where you sign for the package. You know, that'd be amazing. I actually have another branding and uniform idea for the Titans, and that is like, so as I was walking down Broadway to get to the bridge, like I saw way fewer hipsters than I thought I would see. And I saw way more like Lacoste, you know, pastel shirt.
The hipsters are on the other side of the river. So if you had parked on the same side of the river as the stadium and gone up into that part of town in East Nashville, patchouli everywhere.
Dude, yeah, I've been to East Nashville, man. I've done some eating in that part of town, and it is filthy with hipsters. But I'm thinking instead of a hipster themed uniform revamp, why not like a popped collar, like polo shirt as the jersey, and like a sort of khaki short motif as the pants. I don't know, just really lean into that whole Broadway kind of motif for
the
Titans.
I just wish they would go like classic country and do like just an all black uniform with like the word Tennessee on it and just be like the Men in Black.
Oh, dude, that'd be so awesome.
The branding would be great. It would be tough as all get out. It would work. Nashville would own it. It would avoid both the hipster and the like bro country and or frat boy D-bag thing.
Yep.
And they just insist on being the Titan postman.
Yeah, dude. And that uniform would look great too, as evidenced by the movie Any Given Sunday, an old Oliver Stone football picture where the team in that movie, the Miami Sharks, had an all black uniform and it looked incredibly cool. Yeah, they could pull that off, man. That would be easy to do. And it's, I feel like every year we do like a uniform and branding revamp for these guys, but nobody's listening.
We also spend an inordinate amount of time complaining about the Titans, but
we do.
This is our podcast every week. I know. Yeah, it's inflicted on us.
It's inflicted on us. We have to watch them every week. We have to look at that horrible uniform. We have to see the complete lack of like community buy-in to the Titans. Now, I mean, to be fair, there are diehard Titans fans, and I think sitting down low like we did, we were like a row behind a bunch of drunken, moronic, like really diehard Titans fans. They were all in Mariota jerseys. You know, they were all insisting that like Mariota wouldn't be hurt for half the season and that Ryan Tannehill isn't in fact better than him. And it was funny. I mean, like listening to drunken buffoons is like, you know, it's part of what you buy the ticket for, right? It's pretty hilarious. But the last observation I have to make on this 2019 NFL experience, Pipe, is that you're really just paying a premium to watch television outside in the heat. at either end of Nissan Stadium is a huge TV screen, right? Like a skyscraper-sized TV screen on which there is a constant like cacophony of ads, little vignettes, little minor league baseball-esque gags, replays. I mean, you're really sitting there sweating, watching TV, and it occurs to you at that point that like you could do this at your own house, like not sweating and, you know, eating and drinking for pennies on the dollar compared to what you're paying at the stadium.
You used a phrase that that sums up the Titans experience very well, and I think it was minor league baseball-esque.
Yeah.
Yep. I have not been to an NFL game at another stadium in a long time.
Yeah.
So I've been to more than one Titans games. And, going to a Nashville Sounds game, which is a AAA baseball team, is way, way more fun.
Yeah.
Because it's minor league baseball-esque, as it should be, as opposed to, like, the biggest professional sports league in America, and they can't get their act right.
Yep. Yep,
it's not a fun experience. I will take Titans tickets if somebody gives them to me. Granted, preseason is also less interesting than regular season because you're not watching the starters. Stadium's not as full, etc. But even then, it's a pretty flat experience.
Dude, I will say this. It was very special to see the Pats. Like, to be able to see a dynasty in person, and even just to be able to see Brady, like, come out and sort of do the like visiting dignitary shtick. Mm-hmm. Brady didn't do anything. Like he didn't play. He didn't even like fully warm up, but he was in uniform. And it was like everywhere he went in the stadium, there was like a pack of people just like wanting to touch the hem of his Nike jersey. You know, I mean, there were Brady worshipers everywhere. Probably half the stadium, it was people in Patriots jerseys. So it was really cool to see Brady and James Devlin and Belichick and, you know, all these kind of Patriots legends, in person. That was pretty cool. But,
that is the best aspect of preseason football is that like the games themselves are not fun, but to be able to go and see your team. So I went to the Vikings Titans games last year, two years since I moved to Nashville, the Vikings were in town and I never get to see the Vikings play in person because they play in a division that is 1,000 miles away from here. So that is fun to be able to kind of go throw on your colors and root for your team, even if it's like a janky version of your team in a dump of a stadium.
Totally. And it was fun, man. There were individual moments that were great. Like one great Titans moment was Delanie Walker caught a touchdown pass. So he was hurt all of last season. He's one of my favorite tight ends. He's a consummate, just kind of pro.
Fun.
And to see him catch a touchdown and kind of get the adulation from the fans who were appreciating him being back, it was pretty cool. Mariota ran for a 2-point conversion and like got hit and flipped onto his back into the end zone, which I was like, there's no way he's getting up from this. But he did get up, which caused the you know, a sigh of relief from everybody in the stadium. So there are always great moments at a pro football game. Like I'm reminded of just how exceptional these athletes are. You know, it is truly the best of the best. And it was a lot of fun to see them in person, but, Piper, that's our Titans experience until next year. I can't imagine ever buying season tickets and just being that person. It seems miserable to me, but
I was talking to a friend who was looking at season tickets, moved to town, is interested in getting them and then, you know, flipping ones he's not going to use, et cetera. And he looked at him and he's like, there's no way I'm spending that much money to watch that team play even 3 times per year. So
exactly. Yeah. And the Titans are still very boring. Like to be clear, like they're going to go 7-9. You know, the receiving core is going to be mediocre. Mariota will get hurt. You know, Derrick Henry will do his Derrick Henry thing, which is rushing for like 1,000 yards in the last 4 games of the season. Like it's by and large the same team. They've added some pass rushers. You know, Cameron Wake is there. He's really old. Although we had a really old pass rusher in Brian Arakpo a couple of years ago. And, so I don't know. I'm not convinced that, you know, this year's team is going to be markedly different than last year's team, I guess. But time will tell, Piper. But we have baseball things to talk about. And you had the really great idea of doing a draft of things that we've liked and disliked the most about this year's baseball season. And I think each of us did a couple minutes of show prep, which is kind of a departure for us. So how do you want to structure the draft? Let's talk about parameters.
So I figured we would just go 5 rounds, maybe, per topic. So, top 5 for each of us. And just alternate picks. So maybe if you go first for favorites, then I'll go first for least favorites. And we just alternate and then just throw it out there and talk it out.
Yeah, let's do it, man. Let's do it. I've got some. Let's kick this draft off, Pipe, with round 1, the first round of likes. And why don't we let you kick it off?
All right,
the thing you liked the most about 2019 pro baseball.
All right, so I'm going to go this feels fairly obvious to me. It seems, you know, it's sort of like the Andrew Luck first pick as opposed to like the Kyler Murray first pick, which was, you know, a bit of a surprise. And it is the young stars of Major League Baseball, specifically those whose dads played in Major League Baseball when I was a kid.
Dude, I love it. I've got this on my list, actually.
So we've got Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Yep.
We've got Dante Bichette Jr.
Yeah.
We've got the Biggio kid, whose first name is some like white preppy name. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, and then Dustin.
There we go. Something like that. Colton. And then Fernando Tatis Jr., whose dad once hit 2 grand slams in the same inning, by the way. Well, fun fact. I think, first of all these guys are really good. Specifically Guerrero and Tatis. Like, they're just monsters, which is tons of fun. That doesn't even account for the other young stars like Ronald Acuna and Rafael Devers, who's called a bust for Boston a couple years ago, but he came into the league at like 19 and now at 22. They're like, oh, he's actually supposed to be a rookie now, and he's phenomenal. Pete Alonso for the Mets. There's a bunch of them. And none of those guys are pitchers. So the young guys whose dads played, it's so cool to like watch Vlad Guerrero Jr. and see. He hit a homer the other day. I think the ball was literally sitting on his shin when he hit it.
Wow.
I mean, it was so far inside and down, and he just yanked it down the left field line. And I was like, huh, I think I've seen his dad do that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Those are just super cool experiences and one of my favorite things.
Dude, it's so funny. That was on my list because I watched that team last night. I watched the Blue Jays, who have all these like second generation, you know, MLB stars. I watched them play the Mariners, and it was a great game because the roof was open in Toronto. So Toronto had, I think, the first retractable roof stadium anywhere.
I think so.
The old Sky Dome. And it was a really pretty night. They had the roof open. Just super fun to watch all these really talented second generation guys, man. It made me feel a million years old, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. So
another one on that, Pudge Rodriguez's son, Derek, is a pitcher for, I think, the Giants now. He came up as a minor leaguer in the Twin system actually, and then went over there, and he broke into the league last year, but I was just thinking through of other juniors or sons, and he's on the list too.
Yeah. Dude, so am I drafting my first round like or my dislike right now?
Let's do likes. Let's do a whole draft of likes and then
a whole draft of likes and then a whole draft. Okay, round one, my like is openers pipe. So for pitching, this whole idea of using an opener, letting the opener throw an inning and then like going ostensibly the rest of the game with your headliner or your more traditional starting pitcher. I have liked this. I think the Tampa Bay Rays kind of piloted this last year. And a handful of other teams have been using it, including my Mariners. And I think it's really helped us because we lack what you would call a dominant pitcher anywhere in our rotation. So we have a bunch of kind of mediocre pitchers, and it's really helped us because using an opener means that your quote unquote starting pitcher just has one less trip through like the meaty part of your opponent's lineup. So if we're starting Mike Leake or if we're starting any of our other starting pitchers, it means that they don't have to face like the murderer's row part of the opposition's lineup one more time. So it's worked well for us. Yeah. I think it's been good for our pitching staff. It's just kind of a fun way to reimagine baseball. And I guess I like this pipe in the sense that I'm not big on reimagining baseball through rule changes and a bunch of stuff that kind of changes the essence of the game, if you will. But anything strategic that's different is really interesting to me. And this has been fun to see. So, you know, using a reliever in that first inning and then letting your starter, you know, kind of go into the sixth, seventh, eighth inning has been, it's been kind of a fun thing. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on the idea that I don't like it when they're like, let's limit the number of this and that pitching changes or put a pitch clock on or whatever. Like, it's fine, whatever. It's not really... That doesn't improve the game. But when people look at the game and go, we're trying to get 27 outs, what is the most effective way to get 27 outs? Yeah. And just, I mean, football and basketball do this all the time. In basketball, it was like, wait, three-pointers are worth 50% more than two-pointers. Maybe we should shoot more of those. It's just, it's just that, and then figuring out creative ways to do it, which I think is fun. I know some people lose their minds, which may or may not be on my draft board for least favorites, but we'll get there eventually. All right, my second pick for favorites is it's actually a social media account.
Ooh, interesting.
It is the Pitching Ninja Twitter account.
Okay,
so nice. What this person does, I forget his name. I think it's Rob something or other, maybe Rob Friedman. He just posts short videos or GIFs of pitchers throwing filthy stuff, but also with some scouting stuff. So it's like, you know, watch the spin on this. He'll post a short video of a guy showing his grip. It's just, if you love to watch great pitchers do their thing, it's basically like a perpetual highlight reel of that, but also an education in how they do it. But the other cool thing that he's done is he's actually started another account where aspiring professional baseball players, so high schoolers, college players, can post their videos, and it's become like a scouting service. So guys are getting recruited to colleges, guys are getting signed to minor league teams, getting tryouts, because they played for some junior college in Nebraska. They throw 92 with good sync. And and a scout season is like, yeah, we should definitely get that guy in our system. Like, I bet we can teach him a good changeup. And so it's fun from a fan standpoint, but it's also just great for the game because it just raises the profile of talented people. And you can tell that he loves watching good pitching and scouting good pitching. So the Pitching Ninja Twitter account is my other favorite.
Dude, I dig that. That's one of those like examples, and I need to remember this because I can very easily get curmudgeonly and old, where like technology really has added to the game. I've got a follow like that in the football world. There's a guy that just posts like filthy offensive line videos.
Ooh, what is it? I want to know this one. I love watching O-line.
Dude, I got to look it up, and I'll text it to you after we're off the
air. Is it just all Quentin Nelson destroying people?
Dude, it's a lot of Quentin Nelson, but it's a lot of just like technique stuff too, like perfect combo blocks or perfect like, you know, pin and pull stuff. Like, this guy loves offensive line.
Yeah.
And it's super fun to watch. But yeah, technology can help us. And my second one, Pipe, is a little bit technology related in that for the first time in my baseball fan career, I got League Pass this year. So I got League Pass just for the Mariners. I've really enjoyed watching them, if not every day, then every couple of days, catching a few innings here, a few innings there. Just the ebb, the flow, the patter of baseball. It's been nice to have it in my house this summer. But specifically, Piper, the Jason C. Gillette commercial. If you've got MLB League Pass, you know that they run like four or five commercials on rotation.
That might be generous. I think it's two.
They run two commercials. And one of them is in my least favorite things about the season. But I've really enjoyed this Jason C. commercial. I feel like I've got like a doctorate in that commercial, in the sense that like I've kind of in my mind written a whole backstory for this guy. And
He's a firefighter from New York who has very sensitive skin.
He's got very sensitive skin, and he's got a head like, and this is not a pejorative, his head is like a big ham. You know what I mean? It's just like a big lump of meat on top of his thick neck, and he's got the uniform on. He's sitting in the firehouse talking in a very, to me, Pipe, tender-hearted way about his skin and about how the
Emotional. He's very emotional about the travails of shaving.
It's that moment where like you feel like a guy's just about to cry. You know, it's that magic moment like right before the crying, but you know it's coming. That's kind of tonally where he's at through the balance of the commercial. And he's talking about the Gillette Skin Guard razor and just what a difference it's made in his life. And I don't know how these little rituals develop, but every time I'm watching a Mariners game and I see that commercial come on, I just snap a picture of my television and text it to you. And I feel like it's really taken our friendship to the next level.
It really has. And the thing that I realized the last time I was watching this, which I also sent you a picture of it, was that they only show his side of what feels like a conversation. And I'm like 85% sure Barbara Walters is asking the questions.
Dude, it has that Barbara Walters feel, doesn't it?
Because just the sincerity and the feeling, and like you can just picture her, you know, very earnestly leaning in and asking, now how did it feel to shave with your previous razor? And and he just talks about how it was just destructive to his face and ultimately his life, apparently.
His life, his heart, probably his marriage ended because of his last his last razor. I mean, I see Jason C. Like, I've already written it in my mind, kind of like a Nora Ephron romantic comedy, in that, like, there's a Meg Ryan-esque, like, cute, you know.
Yeah, like a meet cute with Gillette.
Yeah, he's got a meet cute coming up with Gillette, with, like, the Meg Ryan character. She's 35. She sees the ad because she's got League Pass, and she writes some letters, and they get together. So in my mind's eye, that's how it works out for Jason C. Pipe, what's your next one?
Oh, man, there were some good ones. All right, I think I'm going to go with unorthodoxly beautiful baseball swings.
Mm. Yeah,
so three guys come to mind with this, all three of whom are just destroying the baseball this year. So the first is Pete Alonso.
Yeah.
Who is just the polar bear of a human being who plays first base for the Mets, has already broken the National League rookie home run record. With whatever, a month and a half left to go in the season. And he is a classic power hitter. Like, you look at him, you're like, oh, he looks like Lou Gehrig. Like, he's just,
yeah,
he's a big, thick, muscly guy, but not like Adonis muscly, more like that guy, you know, is a bricklayer muscly.
Yeah, exactly.
And when he swings, you're like, it's not pretty, but yeah, man, it's dangerous. And he just destroys baseballs. So that's totally one. The second is Cody Bellinger, for who I think is currently the National League home run leader for the Dodgers, who is a lefty, and lefties always have prettier swings than righties for whatever reason. But his is not like the Ken Griffey Jr. pretty, because he never takes his second hand off the bat.
Yep.
And so it's this, it has sort of a weird whip feel to it.
Yeah.
But it is spectacular in its own right. And the third is Ronald Acuna for the Braves, who is maybe, it's either him or Javier Baez who are maybe my favorite players to watch just as an individual exciting player. Because Acuna's a righty, but he has a swing kind of like a lefty. It's that real loose follow-through. Feels a little bit like, remember Alfonso Soriano had that kind of weird, unorthodox swing, except he's a better hitter than Soriano was, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, Soriano was really good, but I think he's a more consistently good hitter. So the unorthodox, spectacular baseball swing is my third pick.
Love it, dude. You know what? My third pick is kind of dovetails with that, so I'll say this one now. Guys who look like mid-century ball players. So guys with body types or the way they wear their uniform or whatever that just makes them look mid-century and throwback. And Pete Alonso was on that list for me. My own Daniel Vogelbach, Vogie from the Mariners, is on this list. Like, you drop those guys into 1955 and they look like completely at home. And I just think that's cool. Pipe, do you have one more favorite, one more like?
I do. I actually have a few, but I'm going to go with Justin Verlander. As the representative for old pitchers who are still destroying people.
Yeah, dude, I like that.
By old, I mean he's my age. But he also fits the mid-century category that you just described, because he wears, like, his baseball uniform fits snugly. He's a big dude, but not like ripped, muscly looking. He just looks he looks kind of Nolan Ryan-ish out there.
Yeah, big, and lanky, kind of farm boy type dude.
He's 36 or 37. He still throws gas. He never gets hurt, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And he's just – he's awesome to watch. And he's been doing it for like 12 or 13 years now. And I hope he goes for another 4 or 5. Like, I hope he pitches till he's 40. It would just be amazing. But he is the figurehead for the old baseball player, specifically the old pitcher club. As all sports move younger, I love watching old guys still succeed. So that goes to Justin Verlander.
Dude, amen. I'm 100% with you on, like, awesome old guy stuff. All right, my last one, Pipe, is the Mariners rebuild. I have liked this. I have enjoyed this. We got tons of prospects this year. DePoto does, like, a new trade every 2 weeks, so there's always news. There's always stuff to listen to on the Mariners podcasts. It's been fun, man. And we've sloughed off a lot of our, like, you know, big ticket, high priced old guys, Jay Bruce, Robinson Cano. The Cano trade looks great for us at this point. And we've gotten younger. We've gotten prospects in our system now, finally, for the first time in, like, forever. I think our minor league system now is considered good, which was not the case like 12 months ago. So, I've enjoyed the Mariners rebuild. It hasn't been as hard to watch the team lose. consistently knowing that we've got such good prospects in the pipeline. And, you know, for a rebuild season, like it hasn't felt hopeless. Like I watched us play Detroit last week, and there's a team that's going nowhere. Like the Tigers are hopeless. And, you know, watching the Mariners play, they still bring a lot of energy. There's a good feel. There's a good vibe. You know, all our guys now are young. Like most of the guys on the field are young. So they're still like energetic for the game, having a lot of fun. So I've enjoyed the Mariners rebuild this season.
A good rebuild is a lot of fun to watch. It is. Especially because the season is so long. If your team is not good, you have to have something that you can kind of turn your attention toward to be like, all right, well, I'm going to watch out for this thing. And watching the young guys or the minor leagues or kind of how are things coming together, that's, you know, as a Twins fan, I have lots of experience watching young guys and waiting for them to get good. So it does make it fun.
Okay, Piper, I'm going to kick off round one of our least favorites draft. And this is one that just, like, burns me up. And I really hate it. And in fact, I have another curmudgeonly old baseball friend, my buddy Kevin from Tampa. So, Kevin, if you're listening, whenever this happens, we text back and forth and complain about it for like 5 minutes. So, number one, first round draft pick for my dislikes list is managers not letting pitchers who are dominant throw complete games. So let's say this is the scenario. Like your team is up 6-0. You're like an out or two into the ninth inning. Your pitcher is dominant. He's thrown a shutout through like almost a full game. And then the manager takes him out with like one batter left because he doesn't want to go like righty lefty or whatever.
Yeah.
And dude, it just burns me up. Like, why not let a guy who's being dominant throw a complete game? And on a less drastic level, just taking out a dominant pitcher because he's hit his pitch count. And this has happened to us. Not that we have dominant pitching in the Mariners necessarily, but there have been games where, like, you know, we get into the sixth inning, we're up like 4-1 or 5-0 or whatever. And just because, you know, Marco has hit his pitch count or Mike Leake or whoever it is has hit their pitch count, we pull him out, we put in a crappy reliever who then like proceeds to give up, you know, four runs in an inning or whatever. I just don't like this. I think there's an emotional ebb and flow to sports that analytics type people just don't get. And, you know, when you're an athlete and you're feeling hot, or when you're on a hot streak, or you're just feeling really good, like the last thing you want is to be yanked out of a game. And I don't know. I like the old school kind of motif of letting a dominant pitcher continue to be dominant. So that's my first one.
Yeah, that's an interesting one because there's definitely a give and take. I do believe in pitch counts as a generality, especially for younger pitchers. It's when they, like you brought up Mike Leake. Like if Mike Leake is ever on a hot streak, for God's sake, let that thing run all the way out because it happens twice a year.
Yeah.
And he's like 32. You know, he's not at a place. Like, his arm is what it is at this point. And
that's right. It's not like you're developing his arm.
Yeah, you bring up a guy from the minors, and you're like, okay, we only want him to throw so many innings. We got to protect his arm a little bit and kind of build him up over the next season or two. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But this goes back to the Justin Verlander, why I love this guy. Like, he is the type who, if he's, you know, he's thrown 8 1/3, he's at 117 pitches, the manager wouldn't even think about coming to get him because he would hit him with a fastball. And he would just send him, same with Max Scherzer, like they would just send those guys back to the dugout. They'd get off, get off the mound. I'm finishing this game, that kind of thing.
Yep.
I dislike when analytics take too much prominence. I do think there's merit in research and kind of like we're talking about being creative and getting outs. This is like the downside of that.
Totally. All right, Pipe, what's your number one pick for dislikes?
Major League Baseball's marketing.
Interesting.
This corresponds exactly with my number one favorite thing, which is young stars.
Yeah.
Major League Baseball sucks so bad at promoting the best things about itself.
Mm.
It has stars, it has personality, it has fun and excitement and drama and just insane talent. And the NBA knows that its stars are its stars. And so they're just like, we're splashing these guys so much so that you get tired of them. But at least you know what our brand is. The NFL,
that's right,
kind of the same thing. Now, they're more curated and they more own the content. But MLB keeps people from watching their games. They do the dumb local blackout thing on their streaming services. They don't promote their players. They're bad at every aspect of promoting themselves, which as a baseball fan just bugs me because these guys should, like, 10-year-olds should be excited about Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Yeah.
And 10-year-olds are like, who's that? I want to be Odell Beckham, which is fine. Yep. Football's great. But they're missing out on an opportunity to love a different star.
Dude, you're right, man. You're so absolutely 100% right. And I would say that those young baseball stars are way more likable than the NFL stars. I mean, I think, you know, there's more charm, there's more interest in, a lot of those guys that you mentioned than a lot of the NFL guys. All right, Pipe, my second round least favorite thing about the season is all the paraphernalia that hitters wear at the plate and that they then have to, like, undress and, like, discard on the base paths.
It almost feels voyeuristic to watch him take a walk.
Dude, it does, yeah. Like, base running in 2019 is an exercise in, like, taking off a whole bunch of clothes, right? And then you have, like, the little, like, clubhouse kid, the clubby, like, running out into the field and then returning returning to the dugout with, like, literally an armload of stuff, right? So he's got the elbow pads, he's got the shin pad.
He's like the squire who has to help the knight out of his armor.
He's like the squire. And so, like, he returns with the elbow pads and the shin pads and all the stuff, right? But then he brings out, like, the oven mitt that they wear on the base paths.
The oven mitt so much.
Dude, I hate the oven mitt so much. The oven mitt could have been my first round pick, honestly. So if you haven't noticed, it's a thing that looks like an oven mitt that, like, fast base runners wear because they assume they're going to be sliding headfirst into a base and it's supposed to, like, prevent, I don't know, jammed fingers or whatever. But I just, Piper, and again, this is my age talking, I feel like Pete Rose would rather, like, die than wear the oven mitt. You know what I mean? Like, it's to me an aesthetics thing. And ditto for all the crap that they wear to the plate. And I know it's scary to stand in against a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. I've never done it. I assume it's terrifying, but, like, there's an aesthetic, like, coolness and swagger that you lose when you're wearing, like, you know, 20 pounds of armor to the plate. There it is. I said my piece, man.
Yeah, I think the armor or the oven mitt is only acceptable if you have had a previous injury. So, for example, Byron Buxton, Twins center fielder, who's always injured, has injured a hand and wrist headfirst sliding into a base. So for him to do it, I'm like, okay, that's fine. It's like wearing a back brace or an ankle brace or something like that. But to do it as a preventative measure, I feel like you have to earn the right to wear it by getting hurt first, which is silly, but also that here I stand.
It's sensible, though. I get it, Pipe. All right, what's your second round pick?
Oh, man, so many options. I'm going to go with hand-wringing.
Okay, so I like it.
This is the whiny responses. Granted, we've been on the verge of some of this, but the whiny responses to changes in the game.
Okay.
So, for example, every team is on pace to hit a billion homers this year. The Twins are on pace to break the major league record by, like, 80 or something.
Wow.
It's just bonkers. They've already broken their team record for home runs in a season with more than a month and a half left. Mm-hmm. So, and people are like, oh, it's a juice ball. The game's never been the same, yada, yada, yada. People have no sense of history.
Yeah.
There are things in baseball's history called the dead ball era. There was a period of time when they lowered the mound after 1969 when Bob Gibson had, like, a 1.12 ERA and drilled 11 guys in the back. He just, like, baseball, there was the steroid era, there was the cocaine era, there was the pre-integration era. There's just all of these eras in baseball, and that's what happens. Like, every 8 to 12 years, things shift. Whether it's equipment, whether it's technology, whether it's fences being moved in. I mean, there used to be ballparks with 512-foot center field fences.
Yeah,
that changes the nature of the game a little bit. So hand-wringing is silly because the game is fundamentally the same. There's 9 guys against 9 guys seeking to get the most runs before they get 27 outs.
Yeah.
And so you were talking about how you love the opener. A lot of people hate the opener. Some people hate the shift. Like, there need to be a rule against the shift. No, people just need to hit better.
Absolutely.
So here's the thing. There's been less complaining about the shift this year because everybody's hitting homers, and the shift doesn't really have stopped the ball from going over the fence. So I think hand-wringing is silly, and people just need to kind of ebb and flow with the changes in the game and realize that 10 years from now, there's going to be differences from what they do now. There's going to be different kinds of pitchers, different kinds of hitters, different everything.
Sure.
And so, you know, there's a ton of homers and strikeouts. Guess what? In 5 years, there's going to be a ton of contact hitters.
Yep.
Because there's going to be a void for that. So hand-wringing is my next least favorite thing.
Dude, I like it. And I gotta wrap up here in a couple of minutes. So I'll go quicker on this next round, and maybe we'll just do one more round. So my third dislike is the Cola Guard commercial. So this is the other commercial in rotation on MLB League Pass, if you have it. And the Cola Guard commercial is as follows. There's a little like cardboard box that's a cartoon character. And as far as I can tell, like, you take a dump, you put it into this box and you ship it to Cola Guard, and they tell you whether or not you have colon cancer, which probably in the pantheon of like health related developments, this is probably a really good thing. Right. And, you know, if you have colon cancer or a cancer survivor, this is doubly a good thing. But, conceptually, it's a really kind of gross concept, but it's also like the idea of putting a cartoon kind of animatronic like box of poop onto the commercial is, you know, to me just a real head scratcher pipe, you know, and to have it be the thing that you watch so many times that it gets like ground into your subconscious. Yeah, it's just a lot.
That's the kind of thing that that should only apply to, like, that should only happen in a doctor's office. I had to get checked for a stomach parasite after international travel at one point. Similar situation between a doctor and me, and that's it. Like, this should not be on a public broadcast. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, I mean, have we no decorum in 2019? Is nothing sacred, you know? It's hard to watch. Piper, what's your third round pick for baseball dislikes?
All right, third round, I think this is the last one, is unwritten rules. I hate baseball's unwritten rules with the fire of 1,000 suns. There was a situation where the Twins were up by like 6 runs. Their hitter goes to a 3-1 count, which everybody knows is a hitter's count, and he proceeds to line a single to right field.
Mm-hmm.
And the next guy gets drilled in the back because the other guy was not supposed to swing on 3-1 when you're up by 6 runs, which is an unwritten rule I was unaware of. I know you're not supposed to steal when you're up by that much. Again, unwritten rule. But these kinds of things are just – they feel like petty lack of competitiveness.
Well, like, dude, I agree.
Just get the guy out.
Yeah.
Like, that's how this works.
Right. You don't want him to get a hit. Like, pitch better. Get him out. Like, don't find yourself in a 3-1 count.
Especially at the professional level. Like, if there's 10-year-olds in a soccer game and one team is up, like, 14-0, just pass the ball and don't shoot. But it's professional baseball. Get him out and quit your whining.
Well, and to the point of it being professional baseball, I mean, that guy is looking to pad his batting average so that he can get paid the next time his contract comes around. Like, he's looking to get work next season, and, you know, he'll do so by getting on base. And, you know, it's hard to fault a guy for taking advantage of a hitter's count.
And baseball's not really a sport where you can run up the score at a professional level. It's so hard to get hits and to be offensively successful that to get mad at a guy. I mean, I heard a quote that said something like, it's against the spirit of the game. No, you know what's against the spirit of the game? Asking a guy not to do his job. His job is to get hits off of you, and your job is to get him out. So do that thing and quit crying.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's kind of astonishing. It's really interesting, man. Piper, this has been fun, dude. It's been fun to kind of recap the baseball season. I have thoroughly enjoyed my baseball fandom this year, and I think I'll enjoy it more once the Mariners start to get a little bit more competitive. But I've enjoyed our conversation. Always fun to break down the Titans as well. And I should probably go. Do we have a perfect name for the sign off?
Oh, let's see. I think Fernando Tatis is a good sign-off. I think he also deserves an ode because he had a season-ending injury, which would have been my next least favorite thing is injuries. But I think Fernando Tatis should be our sign-off.
Dude, what a cool name, too. If your name is Fernando Tatis, you've never had like an uncool day in your life. You know what I mean? You're going to grade school. You're walking a little taller because of your name. I don't know. Tip of the cap to the Tatis family. And I know they're listening, you know, so wherever you are. Yeah. Piper, we have done what we always do on this sports program in that we've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. And until next time, Fernando Tatis Jr.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. Give thanks in all circumstances. God invites us to cultivate thankful hearts by turning our eyes toward Him in good times and bad. To listen to more Abide Christian Meditations, just go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Christian Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.